And let's turn to Mark chapter 9. Mark chapter 9. We want to welcome everybody at North County, online, or wherever you're watching at. God bless you. Happy Father's Day to you as well. Mark chapter 9. We are continuing our series called The Royal. And if you can turn to Mark chapter 9 and say the royal at the same time, say royal. And it's a story about a young boy who was orphaned and he was being discipled by an older man so he can take over his father's kingdom that his father left behind. And he is discipling the boy in 7 different books. The first book is called Warriors, and it's about ancient warriors in his father's kingdom. What we are going to do is study 7 biblical genres or literary styles, the first one being biblical warriors or what we call narrative, biblical narrative. And the biblical narrative is stories about real people in real times, real places. And today's biblical narrative is going to be out of Mark chapter 9. So let me say a word of prayer, and then we'll get into that. Lord, thank you so much for your word. Thank you so much that you love us. And I pray you continue to teach us how to understand the Bible story, how to understand stories. In Jesus' name, amen. I am a Discovery Channel fan back in the day, Wild Kingdom. Any of y'all remember Wild Kingdom? Okay, so everybody raising their hand, those are the old people, okay? How many people do not know Wild Kingdom? Okay, those are all the youngins. It's back in black and white TV, you know, it's hard to explain what that's like. But Wild Kingdom was an animal show. It was 2 guys used to go out and wrestle alligators and all that kind of stuff. But I was watching one day, and they were doing a special on wildebeest. Wildebeest are, there's like 1.5 million wildebeest in a herd, and they migrate, you know, in the Serengeti Plains, and they walk 5 million miles and get their food, and they walk 5 million miles back, and they get eaten by hyenas and cheetahs and all that kind of stuff. And wildebeest serve no purpose. This is just my opinion. My opinion means what? If you're a visitor, I got everybody trained not to trust my opinion. If you're in North County, my opinion means nothing, okay? Just read the Bible. If it's not in the Bible, don't believe me. But my opinion, take it for what it's worth, that these wildebeests serve no purpose other than to be eaten. They're ugly. They're like mules, and they're a combination between a mule, horse, and a roach. I mean, I don't really know what you gotta just look up wildebeest. There's just really no serve the purpose. So there's 1.5 million, and they're just food, walking Big Macs and double doubles for the other animals. So one day, this mother wildebeest was getting ready to give birth, and the baby has to be able to be born, stand up, and run with the adults in 15 minutes, or the hyenas will come eat it, or the cheetahs. Imagine our kids can't run with us for 30 years. I mean, you know. Yeah, you ever hear kids, you know, they're like 18 talking about, I'm an adult. Okay, what's a bill? You have a checking account. Talking about you're an adult, okay? Anyway, the baby's born, and in 5 minutes, the baby wildebeest stands up. Mother eats the afterbirth. Baby stands up, I know. And then, 10 minutes later, the baby was kind of, you know, kicking out the kinks, getting ready to, you know, be able to run. And then a hyena comes. Mom chased the hyena away. Another hyena comes, mom chased the hyena away. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 15 hyenas. 5 or 6 or 7 of them chase the mom to the one direction, and the others take the baby right in front of the mom. They got it by the ear, by the tail, by the lip, and they eat the baby right in front of the mom. And so the mom, you know, she's stomping on the ground because she's watching her child get eaten right in front of her. And I was just thinking about kids, people who are just destroyed by all the hyenas, you know, drugs and gangs and pornography, et cetera, et cetera. All the ways that lives are destroyed. And what was sad as I was watching this show and yelling at the TV, because you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the mom's going to save her. You know, I'm just, you know, come on, mom. You know, I'm just yelling at, and the thing's probably like 50 years old. They're all dead anyway, right? That in the background, there's 1.5 million wildebeest eating grass. They're not doing anything because they're minding their own business. This happens every day in the Wild Kingdom. And what's sad is that a lot of times it takes one person to save another person. And we watch people's lives get destroyed all the time, sometimes in our family, sometimes not. and we don't do what we could do. Now, one person can't save everybody, but we all can do what God tells us to do. And if we're sensitive to do what God tells us to do, who knows what can happen? And this story we're going to look at, it's a very simple story. A dad has a son who is demon-possessed, and he's going to bring his son to Jesus, and first to Jesus' disciples, then to Jesus, and we're going to see what's going to happen. Now, remember when we talk about biblical narrative, because this is a narrative, it's a story. These are real people, real times, real places. Whenever you read the Bible, all the narrative stories are real. None are mythical. They're real stories. They're imperfect people, other than Christ. They're imperfect people. They do things that sometimes they should and sometimes they shouldn't. The Bible stories tell what did happen, not necessarily what should happen. So all the stories have that characteristic. Now, whenever you read a Bible narrative, you want to identify God's friend. Everyone say God's friend. And you want to identify Satan's friend. Say Satan's friend. Now, God's friend and Satan's friend don't necessarily have to be people. They could be angels, demons, your perception of yourself. We saw last week Moses was being called by God, and his self-doubt was holding him back. Okay, so that was the enemy. It was self-doubt. Of course, the devil was feeding it. Okay, so you have God's friend, Satan's friend, and then in the background you have God and Satan. And so that's in every story. And the plot in the narrative is the tension between God's friend and Satan's friend. Someone's trying to obey God, and Satan's friend's trying to block that or hinder that somehow, oppose that. And then the plot resolution is where the hero comes in and relieves the tension. And in every biblical narrative, God is the hero. In every biblical narrative, who's the hero? In every biblical narrative, God is the hero. Exactly. Now, before we get into the story, whenever you read a biblical narrative, you want to identify with the characters, identify the characters, and then identify with the characters. Are you like God's friend? And if not, how can you become more like God's friend? Are you like Satan's friend? And if so, how do you not do that? How did God save the day in the story? And what does that tell you about God and how he might save the day in your life? Because we are all living in biblical narrative every single second. You are never not in a story. You are your own drama. Some of you are living Desperate Housewives. You created that. Some of y'all living, you know, CSI. Some of y'all living, you know, Days of Our Lives, As the World Turns. I don't know if those shows are still on. But anyway, you know, the whole soap opera. Some of y'all, but we're all, and by the way, we're living multiple stories. Every person you have is a different story, if not multiple stories. And then you and yourself, how many stories do you have just going on in your own head? So you are always living these stories. Sometimes you're God's friend. Sometimes you're Satan's friend. Sometimes you're both. I obey God, I disobey God. But more importantly, God is always the hero in your life. Don't look to people to be your hero. God can work through people, he does, but it's ultimately going to be God. It has to be God. And so you always want to go to God for all your solutions. That's what's going to happen in all these biblical narratives. That's what's happening in this story. Let's look at chapter 9, Mark. It says, Jesus is coming down from the mountain of transfiguration. It says, when he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude around them and scribes disputing with them. Immediately when they saw him, all the people were greatly amazed, running to him, greeted him. Verse 16, Jesus says, what are you discussing? One from the crowd answered and said, teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. And whenever he seizes him, he throws him down, he foams at the mouth, he gnashes his teeth, and he becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast him out, but they could not. Very simple story. Christ is on the mountain of transfiguration. He comes down. He sees a crowd around his disciples. He comes over. They all run to Christ, and Christ says, what's going on? And this father says, I brought my son, who is demon-possessed, and I brought him to your disciples so they can help, and they couldn't. I brought them to your disciples so they can help, but they couldn't. People are not always going to be your solution. God, in the end, it's going to be God, and sometimes God will use the people you think, and sometimes God will use the people you don't think. So he brings the boy to the disciples, and they couldn't help him. And look what it says in verse 19. Jesus said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. Everybody say, bring him to me on three. One, two, three.
Bring him to
I was speaking at one of our, we used to have Miles Ahead Crusades, we call them festivals now, probably 10 years ago or so, at the sports arena. And I was doing the altar call, and there was probably about 10,000 kids in the sports arena, and I was doing an altar call, and I was saying, if you lied, God can forgive you. If you've been in gangs, God can forgive you. If you've had sex, God can forgive you. I was just going down the list of sins that these kids probably been engaged in. And the Lord said to me, say, if you're a prostitute, I will forgive you. And I'm preaching. I'm like, God, you know, there's no prostitute here. These are kids. I got to do the altar call. Hold up. And I'm just. And so I'm saying all these sins. And he keeps saying, say, if you're a prostitute, I'll forgive you. I'm like, God, there's no prostitutes here. These are kids. You know, and it was like, I gotta keep going down the list that, you know, the list of kid things kids do. It's not prostitution. So I was just going down and having this conversation in my head with God, trying to tell him I'm not going to say that. And he's trying to say, oh, yes, you will. You will say it. So I said, okay. So I say, if you're a prostitute, and it was really awkward to say. It didn't flow because I didn't buy it, right? But I just said it. I said, if you're a prostitute, God can forgive you. And I was like, man, that was awkward. You know, they came down. We did the altar call. Then I walked off the stage. My wife was at the bottom of the steps. She says, what was up with that prostitute thing? I said, I don't know. God was tripping. He wanted me to say that. He was, I don't know what he was thinking. He just told me to say it. So we went home, that was a Friday or Saturday night. Next week, I call a friend of mine who's a pastor. His secretary answered the phone right before she gave him to me on the phone. She says, I need to tell you a story. We went to your event at the sports arena the other day. And there's this girl in our church. She's 16 years old. She's a prostitute. And the whole time we were driving there, she was asking me, would God ever forgive her? We're walking in. Is God ever going to forgive me? We're sitting in the seat the whole night. She kept asking me, will God ever forgive me? God says, listen, I needed her to hear that. Bring her to me. We have to realize that Christ is the answer to our problems. And if you have an issue today, your son has an issue today, your family has an issue today, Jesus says, you faithless generation. Why cannot you help that boy? Why can't you just trust me? And let's keep reading. Look what it says in verse 20. It says, they brought him to him, and when he saw him, immediately the spirit convulsed him. He fell on the ground, wallowed foaming at the mouth. And Jesus said, how long has this been happening to him? And the father said, from childhood. And the father said, often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Number one in your notes, we need to confess everything with Jesus. Tell Jesus everything. Here's what we have to understand. When Jesus asks a question in the Bible, he already knows the answer. Father, tell me, how long has this boy been dealing with these demons? Jesus already knows the answer. Guess what? He knows what's going on in your life. He knows all your junk. He knows what you have hiding under your mattress, what you got in the closet, in the top shelf, in the back corner, what you got in the little attics, little crawl space up in your roof, in the top of the closet, little hall crawl space. There's something up there. What's that? God knows. In the refrigerator, in the garage, God knows. What's on your cell phone? What's in your computer? God knows. Tell him. He already knows. He wants you to admit it to him. So he tells the father, Father, I want you to tell everybody here how long your son's been dealing with this so they can know. Because I already know. And then after you tell them all what's been happening with your son, they will know how big a miracle this is going to be. Because I'm getting ready to do something big. He says the demon threw him in the fire and then the water to destroy him. He doesn't throw him in the water to cool him off from the fire. He's trying to destroy him. The devil does not want to bless you. He will tell you, go cheat on your wife or your husband. It'd be better. No, it won't. It's going to destroy your family. Period. Go get high, go get drunk. Don't go to church every week. You don't need to go every week. All he's trying to do is destroy you. That's it. He doesn't have the capacity to help give you life because he doesn't have life. He doesn't have the power of life in his hands, the devil. He's a liar. He's a murderer. He's the father of lies. He's a destroyer. He's an accuser. That's what he is. And so if he's guiding and directing your life and you're listening to him, I'm telling you now where it's going. Death. Your dreams are going to die. Your relationships are going to die. Your health is going to die. Your reputation is going to die. Your opportunities are going to die. And then eventually you'll die. So the devil's intent is very clear. He is not your friend. And so in this case, Satan's friend is the demon inside the boy. Look what it says in verse 33. Jesus said, Jesus said in verse 23, if you can believe, all things are possible or posible. All things are possible to him who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. Number two in your notes. Identify and admit your doubt and unbelief. This is a most simple yet profound concept. Identify and admit, confess, surrender your doubt. Some of you have something you're hitting your head up against the wall with. You're trying to solve a problem, fix a problem, get a job, get a wife, get a husband, get over your addiction, get over your anger problem. God is over here saying, I can do that. I can fix that. But you got to do it my way. And God is very stubborn. Everyone say God is stubborn. Stubborn. Thank you. Let's do that. Say stubborn. S-T-U-B, burn. What that means is that God is never going to do it your way. He only does it his way because his way is best all the time. So God is saying to you, you want me to help you get through that problem? I need you to pray. God, how is praying going to help me with my wife's attitude? It's Father's Day. We got a favor to guys today. Because when you pray, you will realize that you created your wife's attitude. Sometimes. How's my praying going to help me with my husband's attitude? How's my praying going to help me get a job? I kind of believe that, but I don't really. You don't go to church every week. Well, do I really have to go every week? It's not that you have to. You should want to. What about getting in a small group? Well, do I really need to get in a small group? You know, I don't want to be around people. Well, you're a person. I don't want to tell people all my business. Well, don't. Say hi. Sit and listen. You might make a friend. I got money problems. I can't tithe. That's why you got money problems. It's not your money. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. I'm going to prove to you that you really don't believe it's your money. Here's how. I want you to go home today. You can be by yourself or you can stay in front of other people. God, this is all my money. You can't take it. I earned it. I'll spend it how I want, and you can't do anything about it. You're not going to say that. You're not going to say that. God has allowed you to borrow it. He's allowed you to borrow your place where you live, your house, your health, your teeth, your hair. Some of you have already lost your hair. You already lost that one, okay? Some of you went out and bought new hair. It's all right. It's all right. But the point is that none of that's yours. And God is telling you, I'm trying to help you deal with all this stuff. You're trying to do it by yourself because you doubt whether I can help you. Well, here's the thing I want you to think about. God created the heavens and the earth. He could help you with anything. But you doubt it. Here's what the Father did in the story. Jesus, I heard that you healed the blind man, the deaf, the mute. You spoke to the weather. You raised the dead. And here's my son. He's been demon-possessed for a long time. So it's hard for me to believe that you can help him, but I want you to help him, and I want to believe so much so that I'm going to admit my doubt to you, and I'm going to surrender my doubt to you. God, I doubt it, but please help me with my doubt. That is a powerful prayer. It is one thing to say to God, dear God, please bless me today. I need a job. And then for you to mumble under your breath, I don't know if it's going to work. It's another thing to say, dear God, please help me with a job, but God, I really don't know if I really believe. Can you help me believe more? Ooh. God says, okay, that's an open heart. That's a willing heart. I can work with that. I can't work with the double-tongued hypocrite that says, dear God, I believe you, but not really. Do you believe him or do you not? If you don't, that's fine. Believe me, we all have doubt. By the way, I'll prove it. How many of you worried about something in the last 24 hours? Okay, that's doubt. Worrying is saying, God, I'm not sure you're going to do it. I'm not sure you can do it. I'm not sure you want to do it. That's doubt. We all got it. We all got it. You know what God wants you to say? Is God, I got doubt. Please help me with my doubt. Imagine if God could remove your doubt. Nothing is left but faith. So think about your problem. Some of you need to be saved. You need to be forgiven. You need Christ to just cleanse your sin. You don't know if he will. Tell him that. God, will you really forgive me of all my sin? I'm not sure, but I want you to help me believe that. That's an honest prayer. That's what the Father said. Help me with my unbelief. And look what it says in verse 25. This is powerful. When Jesus saw the people came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit and said, deaf, dumb spirit, I command you, come out of him and enter him no more. And then the spirit cried out, convulsed him greatly and came out of him, and he became as one dead, so that many said he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had come into the house, his disciples asked him privately, why couldn't we cast him out? Everyone say 16 words. Try it one more time. Take a deep breath in. Take a deep breath in. Say 16 words. 16 words. That's what I'm talking about. One more time. Take a deep breath in, North County. Say 16 words. 16 words. This many. That's 16. 10, 6. 10 plus 6 is? Very good. 16 words. Your problem is this big. You've been spending money, time, effort, headache, drama for years. This many words. God said, let there be light. And poof, there was light. Let there be fish. There was fish. Let there be birds. There was birds. Do I believe it happened? Yes, I do. I don't believe that a whale grew up on the earth and became a cow. That's what evolution will tell you, that a whale somehow came up, wiggled up on a beach, and over how many years it turned into a cow. That takes a whole lot of faith. That his spout on top of his head came around and became his nose. Please. What happened in the billions of years? He was trying to figure out how to breathe. He died. It's a very practical, very simple question. These many words. God said, let there be light, let there be fish, let there be birds, let there be plants. And by the way, let there be all those things with a seed after their own kind. And guess what? We have that. It's there. Your problem? God could say, let it be fixed. Why not? Because God wants you to learn to trust him. God's most concerned with you being holy than you being happy. We think God's supposed to make us happy. God never said that. Now, if you're holy and you walk with God, happiness will be part of that. So will sorrow. Jesus was a man of many sorrows. God's not concerned with you being happy as much as holy. I was reading in the paper the other day how these billionaires are challenging each other to give their money away. T. Boone Pickens, his picture was in the paper. He lives here in San Diego. I would love to meet T. Boone. Anybody know T. Boone? I would love to meet him. I just love his name. T. Boone Pickens. He has a place here in Del Mar, so the paper said. But there was one of the very wealthy people said, I want to die broke. Imagine making billions of dollars and then spending your last few days or years, whatever, giving it all away. Just like, hey, I want to give you guys $5 million. I want to give The Rock $30 million. Just pay the building off, all right? Just pay the building. Well, 35 for that matter. 35. 35. Call me. You don't have because you don't ask, right? But just imagine being able to do that, write checks and just bless it. But here's what he said. He made all these billions of dollars, and I want to die broke. And you might even scratch your head. Why wouldn't he want to die rich? Because that's not the goal. It's not even the goal to be rich in money, except spiritually. The goal for us is to be holy. 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 So Jesus says in 16 words, can he fix you? Yes, but it's a process. It's a process that you have to believe that God can do whatever he wants to do in your life. And as long as you say, Lord, help my unbelief and let him take care of the rest. Don't say, God, you have to do it this way by this day on this time. We're not calling the shots. Our job is to come to Christ and say, Christ, I got problems. I have doubt. I have disbelief. But I want to surrender it all to you and let you do what you do because I trust you. And that's it. Will you have drama? Yes. Will people let you down? Yes. Will God always be your hero and always be faithful 100% of the time? Absolutely. Will you always understand when it happens at the time? No. But guess what? It's not about you understanding at that moment. It's about you trusting God. For example, when your life is not going the way you want, you're like, God, how come it's not going the way I want? He tells you, why don't you wait till the end of the story? How many of you watch a movie or a show and you get mad in the middle of the show? Because it ain't going the way you want. And what I mean by that is like, you're the bad guy's getting away with it. And you're like yelling at the TV. Anybody yell at the TV or the movie theater? You're like, no, do this. And the director's going, that's what I want you to do. Keeps you watching. But by the end of the show, you know it's going to work out. Because that's how the TV goes. In the end, we win because Jesus Christ comes back. Just wait till the end of the story. Sometimes the end of the story is tomorrow. Sometimes the end of the story is in a week. Sometimes the end of the story is in a year. Sometimes the end of the story is when you die. But in the end, you win. You have to trust God. You have to trust that in the end, what you are going to say is, God, you are right. How many women have had a baby? Okay. Now, I'm going to say something about having a baby. I've never had a baby, but I've seen it. When you're having a baby, you're going through all this labor. You're screaming. You're squeezing the life out of your husband's hand because of the pain. Some of you may even curse at your husband. You're never going to get near me ever again. I should have never kissed you. And you're yelling. And then as soon as the baby comes out, what do you go? I want to have another one. The pain is gone. God is going to do that in your life one day. He's going to take away all your sorrows, all your pain. And you're going to say, Jesus is Lord. But you have to surrender your doubt to him. Look at verse 28. When he had come into the house, his disciples asked him privately, Jesus, that was the bomb. How did you do that? Why couldn't we do that? And he said, this kind can come out by nothing but prayer and fasting. In your notes, you must fast and pray for God's hand to move in your life. God's hand in your life and his miracles in your life is not automatic because you're cute or because you're not a murderer. so God should bless me. I went to church last month. God should bless me. I have a Bible. I'm a Christian. And how faithful are you? How much do you pray? Do you fast? What does that mean? It means don't eat for a period of time or abstain from something for a period of time so you can spend time with God. What do you really do? And he says to his own disciples, just because you're my disciples and walk around with me every day doesn't mean you can just cast demons out. Don't think that's just automatic. You got to have to fast and pray if you want to do that. There are problems in our lives, sin or other things that we deal with, that require more surrender to God than others. More commitment to God than others. And often we see those blessings. We see the spiritual freedom people have, and we want it, but we're trying to make it happen in our own strength. Jesus is saying it ain't going to happen. His own disciples couldn't do it. He says there's some things you have to surrender more of yourself to get. Because when you give me more of yourself, then I can give you more of myself. And when you get more of myself, you can do more things like me. And so in a minute, we're going to pray, and I'm going to challenge you to say to God in your own way, Lord, I have doubted you. I have doubted doing things your way. I've been doing things my way. And I realize it's not going to work. And I want to surrender my doubt to you, and I want you to replace it with faith and trust. And I want to receive everything that comes with that faith. The Bible says you can't please God without faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So, Lord, I trust you. I trust your word. I can't see you, but I see what you do, and I trust that you're going to do it in my life. So I'm going to surrender everything in me that doubts you, that is a skeptic, and I want to receive from you faith and trust. And whatever you do after that, I'm going to trust it's going to be right for me. And this problem and this dilemma and this obstacle in my life, I'm going to trust you with those things too. And I'm going to trust that if I have to walk through them, under them, around them, deal with them, have them impact me, I'm going to trust that whatever results of that is going to be for my benefit. Because sometimes you have to go through hard times to be purified. You just do. Sometimes you have to scrub hard to get dirt off. And in scrubbing hard, it hurts. But when that dirt's off, it looks clean. So right now, I'm going to ask all you to bow your heads. North County, bow your heads, close your eyes. Bow your heads and close your eyes. God knows every single one of us here, every single one of you in North County, everyone listening online, watching wherever you are. He knows you. He knows your struggles. He knows what you've been trying to do without him. He knows your doubt, and he desperately wants to remove your doubt and replace it with power and faith and a sound mind. Today, right now, is your opportunity to say, Lord, remove my doubt. Speak 16 words into my life. Life-transforming words. In the privacy of your heart, if you would like to surrender your doubt to God, receive from him his grace, his love, his forgiveness, his power. Pray this prayer with me wherever you are. In the privacy of your heart, pray, dear God, I know I must believe you in order to be blessed. I must trust you in order to be forgiven. Jesus, I believe that you are Lord, that you died and rose from the dead. Please remove my doubt, my skepticism, my lack of faith. Please replace it with faith and trust. I surrender my life to you. I surrender my sin to you. I surrender my doubt to you. And I receive forgiveness. I receive encouragement. I receive salvation from you right now. Thank you, Lord. as our eyes are closed and our heads are bowed, if you prayed that prayer, in a minute I'm going to ask you to stand. If you're in North County, I'm going to ask you in a minute to stand as well. There's someone there who will pray with you. So right now, eyes closed, heads bowed. If you prayed that prayer and you're saying, Lord, remove my doubt, remove my skepticism, remove my fear, I'm going to ask you right now, where you're seated, stand up and acknowledge his faith. God bless you. Stay standing. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. If you're in North County, stand up, stay standing. There is somebody there who will pray with you in a minute. God bless you. God bless you.